I'm Elena.
I'm Grant.
And this is Whiskers.
We share knowledge regarding SeaQuest. Happy Halloween, everyone.
Yeah.
This is Halloween.
It's spooky season.
This is coming out on Thursday, the 31st of October. It is Halloween.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Are you excited?
I'm so excited. I love Halloween.
You're going to get all the candy?
Probably at discount
tomorrow. You're going to dress up all spooky?
I might wear my bat tank top.
Ooh, I freaking love bats.
I love bats. Might watch The Worst Witch. Has anybody seen that tambourine? Where is it? Gotta find it. Oh, look, it's in your armpit.
There might be a frog in your bass guitar. Anything can happen.
Anything can happen on Halloween. Your dog can turn into a cat.
From London to Idaho.
They all like potatoes.
But the reason we're making such a big deal about it is because the episode of SeaQuest we have to discuss today is Night of Shadows, which aired on Halloween.
And it's spooky. It's the ghost episode.
Just watching through the series the first time, just like watching a few episodes a night for a month. This was such a strange experience, and this episode made no sense to me at all until I looked up and saw, oh yes, air date, October 31st.
Because this is back when shows had enough episodes that they could do special Halloween episodes that had, like, nothing to do with anything else in the season.
Not a single thing.
That was back when life was good. We could just embrace Halloween and have goofy episodes.
It's a little goofy, it's a little spooky, and that's what Halloween's all about, is putting those two together. So this is a straight-up ghost episode. This is a ghost story with all of your classic haunted house spooks.
I love that you say the weird stuff comes in season two. We got a ghost episode immediately.
This is nothing compared to season two.
I'm saying they don't do a Halloween episode in season two.
No, they do a lot of garbage. But I don't want to think about that for a while. So, Night of Shadows was written by Melinda M. Snodgrass, who got into television as story editor on Star Trek The Next Generation seasons 2 and 3. She wrote 5 scripts, the first of which is the classic Measure of a Man. And the 5th of which is The High Ground, which happened to guest star the teen boy from Brothers and Sisters. What a coincidence. Uh-huh. Night of Shadows is directed by Helene Head, who had done, you know, a handful of St. Elsewhere's and L.A. Laws and 1 or 2 of Tribeca to connect with the production team here on SeaQuest.
Uh-huh.
And she went on to direct 2 of HBO's Dear America adaptations.
What? Which ones?
The one about the Great Migration and the one about life as a slave.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay.
You're familiar with these?
I am. I've seen all the Dear America HBO specials.
Okay.
I've also seen the Royal Diaries print HBO specials.
Okay.
All of them.
Okay.
I was...
So you know the work of Helene Head very well.
Yes. I loved them, even though, like, they weren't necessarily that well made. They were, like, they were very much, like, Scholastic HBO specials. Like, there was a lot of stuff that got made like that into, like, little, like, 30-minute things.
Mm-hmm,
and it's that. They had actually a lot of people who went on to do other things.
Yeah. Like, yes. It was a talent incubator sort of situation.
Like, if I am remembering correctly, Allison Pill was in the one. I am double-checking this. I think she was in the, Pilgrim one.
Because of the name. Anyhow, Night of Shadows, there's the SeaQuest episode.
Yeah,
it aired on Halloween. Mm-hmm. It's very spooky.
Yeah.
And the very first shot is a photo album opening up, a great big picture book, like it's Sleeping Beauty or something.
And so Bridger's opening up a scrapbook of him and his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And he takes a picture out. And I must focus on the scrapbook that is this most poorly constructed scrapbook I've ever
yeah.
seen. Because not only is it just
this
like...
This is offensive to you. This hits you where it counts.
Well, I mean, it's just like... It's like two pictures per page on some black paper. Mm-hmm, and the thing mm-hmm. that gets me is when he's pulling out this one photo of his wife, there are only two like photo edges that it's hooked into.
Mm-hmm.
And they're at the top. So if you put this album on a shelf, that photo is falling the fuck out.
Immediately.
And it's not like, you know, they could have put more on there
mm-hmm.
to make it seem like a real photo album, but they only put two at the top. This bugs me.
This is the whiskers difference, folks. For real attention to
detail
here.
They spent all the budget on the hallways and none on the photo album. But so Bridger takes that photo of his wife
mm-hmm.
and he puts it into the scanner of the hologram
mm-hmm.
smoke thing.
Remember the hologram from Premiere? We've spent zero time with the old man or the wife now.
It's been in the background.
Sure, but this is the first time he's gone to it for counsel.
So he scans his wife into it. She appears in the smoke. But not, like, as a moving hologram, just her image,
mm-hmm.
Because he just scanned a photo. Starts talking to her.
He starts introducing this strange tale he's going to tell, because not only is it ghosts, it's a ghost story.
Yeah, to tell to his dead wife.
Is a flashback, a tale of love, and that's why he wants to tell it to his late wife. Although it might have been something he ate, or nitrogen narcosis, but in any case, here's how he remembers it.
So it cuts to the night before as he's telling the story.
With funeral bells ringing through the sequest.
Yeah, so he's like reading in his bed, and we got clocks chiming, funeral bells, we got wind howling.
How does that happen on a submarine? I don't know.
It's spooky season.
It's spooky time.
Anything can happen on Halloween. We've already established this.
Toenails grow long and your hair turns green. Anything.
Anything. While he is reading, the steam of the hologram turns on
mm-hmm.
by itself.
And the old man appears and starts just flatly intoning the same, like, course. You know, take this bearing, go this far to this depth over and over and over again.
Yeah.
So his first thought is, well, computer's fucked. I gotta call the kid.
Let me call Lucas and wake him up and be like, something's wrong with this.
Fix my computer.
And Lucas is immediately like, I didn't do anything.
I love that. I love that his first instinct is to say, I didn't do it.
Oh, I love this because I'm like, how much shit you been getting up to, Lucas? What have you been doing lately that makes you immediately go, wasn't me. And he's like, I didn't say it was, but like, get over here. And so while he's waiting for Lucas to come,
he busts out his big paper book of atlases to see where this heading would take them.
Yes. And as he's looking at it, a hand starts to reach out from the smoke saying, help us.
The hand. Ah.
And he turns around quickly and is like, what? But then there's nothing there except Lucas. Lucas has arrived. And he's like, you told me to come here. Like, I don't, what's going on?
In his bright primary colored block stripe of bathrobe.
It is the most 90s bathrobe ever.
He looks like a box of building blocks for a kindergarten.
Does. He does. It just, it's so much. And why doesn't it have like full length sleeves? Why does it have, like, half, like, elbow-length sleeves?
It was the last birthday present that his dad remembered. Wow. He's had it for about 4 to 6 years.
Yeah. Okay. This all makes sense. And so, Lucas looks at it. Bridger, you know, is telling him, like, I didn't do anything. I didn't turn it on. It just came on by itself.
The button's stuck. The repeat button is stuck. That's all it is. Don't worry about it. Go back to bed.
Lucas heads on out, and as soon as he's gone, the ghost of Mustache Man appears.
Now, it's not fair to say it's a ghost. Everything looks like a ghost. It's a hologram made of mist. It's the ghostliest thing there is.
Fine! Well, a mustache man in a captain's uniform from like 100 years ago appears. And yells at Bridger to get away, and Bridger goes flying into a wall.
Just punched across the room, crashes through furniture. It looks rough. It looks rough. And then the very lovely opening song plays.
Yes! And you know what we've never talked about is the fact that Darwin gets a credit.
Darwin gets a credit as himself.
He's real.
Alive. Is it time to let the listeners in on the Darwin secret?
I think it's time to let them in.
Because it's the only chance we're going to have to talk about Darwin this week. He is not appearing.
He's not in this. Man, he should have been. I would have liked to have had a scene with Darwin learning what ghosts are. Or Darwin being like, yeah, obviously, I see ghosts all the time.
So if you were touring the Universal Studio lot in Los Angeles during the production of Sequest Season 1, you could go inside, you could take a look around, and before you got to certain parts of the set, someone would kneel down to you, young child, and make you promise, pinky swear, cross your heart, that you would keep Darwin's secret in confidence. Darwin is an animatronic effect and not a real live dolphin.
No, he's not. But he's such a good animatronic effect. Fantastic. He's so good.
He fools people. He fools people on screen all the time.
Yeah.
There is very occasionally, a like CG Darwin for select shots that are used very sparingly, very judiciously, sort of like Jurassic Park style integrated.
Yeah.
But there's no real dolphin on set.
No. Like, as a child watching this, I absolutely believe Darwin was real.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they have a trained dolphin that they're... He's not talking. That's special effects. But, like, he's absolutely a real dolphin.
Like Mr. Ed. That's a real horse, and the talking is done in post.
It's the coolest animatronic and, like, puppet stuff. Like, absolutely incredible.
At the time the show was on, there are quotes from people who run dolphin rescues or like the ASPCA saying, I wish they would just own up to the fact that it's a really incredible, impressive effect. We are so glad they're not keeping a dolphin in captivity for this show. Why don't they just admit they're doing the right thing?
Because it takes away the magic.
It's the magic of it.
It's the magic of the dolphin. Oh, man. I would have died if there was a meet and greet with Darwin.
But yes, that is all the Darwin you're going to get this episode. As we
come back from our normal credits, right? Our opening credits.
Normal credits? I didn't see any normal credits.
No, we had the normal, like, the normal montage of cast, right? Uh-huh. And then we go to all, like, the writers and the directors and all that, and now it's spookified.
Yes.
There is lightning. There are screeching cats. There is... everything that you traditionally think of Halloween happening. And I love it so much. Just lightning bolt name. Yeah.
That's exactly how it went.
Yes. Maniacal laugh. Like, it's great.
So Bridger is getting his massive bruise across his back checked out by Wes Phelan.
Yes.
Who wonders if he met any professional wrestlers in the last day.
And he's very like, no, I was hurled by an apparition. And she's like, or you fell out of bed. Like,
onto a professional wrestler,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah.
What was he doing there? Wait a minute.
So Bridger inquires if there is anyone on the staff that studies paranormal things. And she's like, oh yeah, Dr. Levin, obviously.
So Dr. Levin is back for the third episode. He was briefly in Games.
Mm-hmm.
He was featured not as much as the story would suggest he should have been last time in Give Me Liberté. But Dr. Levin is a major, major player here in Night of Shadows.
I'm very confused by the last episode and the fact that, like, he seems like not a member of Sequest, but a member of the crew that is going on to replace the people that we now know are dead. But now he's a Sequest crew member again, too.
Well, I like to think that he was a Sequest crew member, saw an opportunity to transfer to do some work on Aquasphere 7. Aquasphere 7 is closed for being haunted and deadly, so he just stayed aboard.
He should love that. What we're learning here is he should love that it's haunted.
It almost killed him.
Okay, fine. On the bridge, he has directed them to follow the coordinates, mm-hmm. and Dr. Levin is there, like, quizzing him about everything he saw in mm-hmm. his vision, dream, etc.
Connecting all of these details to their possible, like, Freudian symbolic dream interpretation meaning.
Like, ah, yes, you saw doors. That means lots of choices.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You did comment on, you prefer his beard.
His beard is under control. He has a normal man's beard.
Nice trimmed up facial hair.
He doesn't look like
it's
he's going
really to... not really a beard.
He's not going to do close-up magic at me anymore, so that's good.
So while all this is happening, O'Neill's been listening to the water,
mm-hmm.
Like he does, and there's music. There's music coming from the ocean.
Yes.
And it is classical music. It gets piped into the crew.
So of course we gotta send out the probes. The whiskers are going. The hyper-reality probe is going as they come around a ridge and find a shipwreck nestled in the mud and the muck mm-hmm. of the East Atlantic.
Yes. And so, of course, they gotta send the whiskers out, the probes out to try to, like, catch the name. And Bridger also immediately calls Crocker to the bridge.
Which is because, the right thing to do, it turns out.
Yes, because Crocker's got all the intel. He sees that ship and immediately knows, it's the George.
Which I really thought was short for something. Like you might call the Andrea Doria the Doria. It's just the George.
It's just
a mononymic boat.
SS George.
It's so strange to me. Like, there's no way that wasn't taken.
We get a little a meeting with Crocker leading the way, letting us know that in the summer of 1913, mm-hmm. 5 days after the George went out to sea, it went down.
And very, very slowly.
Yeah. And Ford's like, I don't remember the shipwreck. And Crocker's like, well, that's because it really wasn't. And I'm like, no, actually it is. It went down. means shipwreck.
Yeah, yeah.
If it's at the bottom of the ocean, it's a shipwreck.
But it was going down so very slowly that everyone, you know, got off on the lifeboats and were picked up by fishermen off the Canaries.
Except for the captain and the engineer.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The only two souls aboard as it disappeared into the mists of history.
And again, Crocker, even though most people survived, still a shipwreck.
Where is it? On the bottom of the ocean. That's a shipwreck.
Is it in commission right now? No, it's wrecked. It's a shipwreck.
But, you know, a few years later, there was a bit of a war on. So the people curious about the ship got distracted and never started searching again afterward.
Yeah, like, whatever. Hey, Bob. Hey, Bob, I got a job for you.
You found all the main shipwrecks. Let's look for fictional ones. Come on, Bob.
So, Krieg, from maybe his personal video collection, I don't know.
Well, then it's not all porn, is it? Unless this video gets real weird later.
What? Okay, so what if all of Krieg's videos were porn and, like, historical, like, archival shit and nothing mm-hmm, in between? Mm-hmm.
There's a color-coded system. Do not get it twisted.
Krieg has found some video.
Is this also the last we're going to talk about Krieg?
Yes, Krieg is not around
at all. I
guess
he's hanging out with Darwin.
Someone's got to keep him company. So Krieg is found video that someone took of it setting off on its voyage.
And this clearly is video and not film.
No.
This is not 1913 film stock. No, thank you.
No, it's not. It's definitely 1993 with a funky little editing over it.
Oh yeah, they're doing all the After Effects scratch layers, but it's come on.
So there is it's outside on the dock. A whole bunch of people like, oh, that's the boat owner. That's the engineer, and that's the captain. Oh, and who's that lady?
It's the lady from Bridger's Vision. She's the owner, the boat owner's nanny.
Or at least that's what Westphalen speculates, because she's not on the manifest.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So they freeze the video as they're discussing all this, and Hitchcock, like, interrupts to be like, hey, Captain, like, come to the bridge, gotta show you something. And while it's frozen, and they're all, like, getting up to leave, the head of the captain turns to look at them in the video.
A very familiar mustache man.
He
looks right at you, oh my gosh!
Which is honestly one of my favorite, like, things in spooky things is when they make, like, a head move in any of that Halloween stuff from the 90s. It was always like, head! Because it's just so good.
Yeah!
You know it's gonna happen, but it's so good every time.
The thing moved! It's not supposed to move! It's a paused video!
Yeah! So they're all like, oh! And so they all, when you're like, oh, you know what you do? You go ride the maglev to the bridge.
Yes.
And they get there, and Hitchcock's like, hey, I've been probing around.
Mm-hmm.
And the smokestacks are sealed, which is weird. And Crocker's like, ah, yes, that's a new invention of the Georges, actually. It's supposed to open once they go out to sea, but it's not. But, like, why? Why did we have this? Why was this an invention we needed?
The George was apparently a testbed for some incredible technologies that we will keep finding. But what this means is, yet again, the Sequest is so incredibly lucky about finding implausible air pockets everywhere they go.
Yes, because that means it's been sealed and there's air. And also, Hitchcock's like, hey, look over here at this port window. There's a light on.
There's lights on inside somehow. And so Crocker knows that is haunted. This ship is haunted. He spits on the deck.
He's like, nope. And Westphalen looks at Bridger and is like, what did this woman say to you? And he's like, the ghost said, help us. So obviously we must help them. We must go to the ghost ship.
Is that in the UEO charter too? Like they have an obligation to rescue people from ecological disasters, but also they have to exorcise souls of the damned.
Yes, if someone says help, they have to go. Even if they're not alive. Even if they're the devil. Devil's like, help me. They're like, okay.
And that's why Levin has a job.
Yeah.
So after the commercial break, Bridger and Levin come to visit Spooky Lukey.
They open the door to his cabin and the lights are off and he's got the flashlight in his face doing spooky noises.
And Bridger's response is, quote, cut that out.
Turn these lights on.
Stop it, kid. You bother me.
I love it. It's such a kid thing to do.
Part of why I really enjoy the surrogate father relationship is that they don't push it. Like,
no.
They speak to it directly so very, very rarely, and instead they just let it hang by having them talk to each other as if they are father and son.
Yeah.
I didn't do anything. I didn't say you did. That's where it's at. Yeah. That's what it is.
Yeah. Or like this, where like he's comfortable enough to like do that type of shit with him.
Mm-hmm. Cut it out. Come on.
Yeah. So they're there to let Lucas know that Levin wants Lucas to come with them to the George. And he's like, that's awesome. Yes.
And the reason is that ghosts don't mess with children.
Yeah. And Lucas is like, I'm not a child. And they're like, we know, but you're the closest thing we have. Wink, wink. We know you're totally a child.
Darwin is 47 years old. He can't come. Ghosts hate him.
Lucas, before he agrees, is like, you really think it's haunted? And they're like, yeah. And he's like, oh, okay, let's go. Let's absolutely go. I'm on this field trip.
So this is why you're such a fan of Lucas Walinchek.
It's because he's all down for the ghost times.
He spoke to your soul.
Yes.
You felt yes. seen, yes. represented.
Yes.
Okay.
I felt heard. We got shipwrecks. We got ghosts. We got sequests. What's not to like? On Halloween.
Got this, that swoopy hair, as always.
This episode was made for me. Like,
it just needs a little more Darwin.
Yes, I need some Darwin. I need Darwin swimming around with the ghost dolphin.
Would a dolphin leave a psychic wound upon the world? They seem too chill. I can't imagine a dolphin having unfinished business.
The dolphin is there to warn other dolphins to stay away and not get trapped.
From the bad water.
The bad water.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they are taking a launch over. We got Lucas, we got Wes Phelan, we got Levin, Bridger, Crocker, Hitchcock, and then some no-name people.
Yeah, Hitchcock's got some engineering underlings.
Yes.
Because the only times we see them is, like, backing her up, going through the engine room.
Yes, they never speak, we don't know their names.
No.
They are airlocking to the George.
I love watching the seal, like, screw and clamp on and pump out, and then they open the door and there's, like, this... a shower of residual water from the clamping. It's good.
I love any time that they do a seal or like dock with something and you got that water dripping. It is so good. That's an effect that you like. I mean, it's just water. It's cheap, but that's a type of effect that you could anticipate them using less and less as the season goes on. But like they don't.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They continue to use it and it's good.
It is a simple thing, but it is very cost effective at bringing in like a tactile quality.
Yeah.
Like it's something you can, it brings motion and reflects light, but you know what water is. You can imagine the space. You can smell it.
Well, even in, like on the last episode, well, we did not like that like Bridger and Crocker just suddenly appeared on the bridge and like didn't radio. What I did love is, like, they were wet.
Yeah.
They obviously, like, just came through the launch, and they got wet. It's good. It's a good touch. So, Wes Phelan is giving a little chat about air and how air works. This is some old-ass air on the boat.
So they have emergency oxygen. They have little color-changing indicators for the risk of nitrogen narcosis. And like, all right, we're going to check our watches. We're all going to check in on each other. If you're feeling giddy, you move. All this very, like, Wes Phelan is absolutely, like, fire captain of her deck. Like, that is the sort of information, actionable, fact-based. And then Levin's like, all right, by the way, keep imagining, visualize your white, pure aura surrounding your body.
Positive thoughts all the time.
How are you here? How are you allowed on this boat, you crank?
I love it. Your aura. Bridger goes on and tests the air and is like, yep, we can breathe this. And Crocker makes everyone spit before they cross over.
Like it's not wet enough here in the middle of the seal, but sure, sure.
Wes Phelan does not spit.
Mm.
Just gonna point that out.
I wonder if that comes back to bite her.
She finds it gross. Heading into the George, looking around, everything is covered in spider webs, which mean this boat is gross.
How many spiders went down with this ship?
Marine spiders are nasty. Like, you go to, like, a marina, that's gross shit there. But, like, seriously, how many fucking spiders were on this boat? How many?
105 years. What did they have to eat? Each other? Well,
I have many questions about how the spiders did such work. So there's just spider webs all over the fucking place. They point out, like, oh, this is the ship's engine, and it's been modified to do things.
To draw electricity from the skin of the ship from the sea, and that's why there's lights?
What? 1913!
What are you talking about?
This universe! This would work if we were talking about a different universe.
If the secret undercurrent through Sequest DSV was that all of Nikola Tesla's wildest ideas were real and suppressed by the government, then maybe.
Also, there is A sponge thing.
Osmotic membranes that keep the air breathable and maintain the air bubble pockets.
So here's my thing.
They somehow split the seawater into free-floating oxygen and hydrogen.
Here's my thing, is they could have just said, this is so strange, it must be the ghosts making it breathable. And I would have been like, yeah.
Yeah, all right, fine.
I would have accepted that better than this shit.
They have osmotic membranes. What else do you want to say?
Just tell me it's because of the ghosts.
Everyone knows about osmotic membranes.
The lights go on, and they see a skeleton.
A skeleton.
With a gun.
A skeleton wearing captain's stripes. They have found the captain of the ship who died by his own hands. And once they identify this, Crocker says, quote, shiver me timbers. And everyone looks at him like a lunatic.
And he's like, no, I seriously mean that.
Absolutely mean it. Not ironically, shiver me timbers. My timbers be shivered.
There's nothing as unlucky as this. We are all so screwed, we should leave.
And Levin continues to always have some bullshit to say. In this case, it's like, you know,
the unhealthy dead.
The ghosts stick around when the spirit has something unfinished, and there's nothing less finished than a suicide. I'm like,
that's kind of finished.
It looks pretty final to me.
It's kind of done.
It's done. It's over and done.
But okay.
Wes Phelan is definitely looking for an excuse to fire him. He is not allowed on this boat anymore. You're just not a culture fit, Levin. You know why? Because you're a lunatic.
So Hitchcock is sent off with her random men to go figure out why
it's random men. Hallelujah, it's random men. Random men.
So they're going to figure out why the ship sank. And we're going to see them later. So everyone else, however, starts going into the ship's quarters area. I just want to point out that in addition to the Sequest bomber jackets, I also want Lucas's jean jacket that has the big UEO patch.
Mm-hmm.
I would like all of these.
And you can wear all your baseball jerseys under it.
No.
No?
But I want these jackets.
Okay.
Hitchcock quickly finds a sealed room that has been sealed with candle wax.
Mm-hmm.
And inside it is filled with water and three dead bodies. One with an accordion.
They're 200 feet below the surface of the Atlantic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't want to do the math and compare how much PSI the water has and how much strength paraffin wax can provide, because I don't think I have to make the point that I'm making.
What if it could, though?
It's the ghost. It's just the ghost.
It's just the ghost. So she radios to, like, tell everyone, and they're like, but Crocker is just like, but everyone else is supposed to survive, and they're like, obviously not.
Mm-hmm.
There's now four bodies.
Seems the manifest was more of a suggestion than anything. I love the skull that just floats by the window, just bobbing around.
There's a current in that room.
Free-floating, unattached skull. It's great.
As they're walking down this hallway, Bridger and Crocker and all of them, the door in front of Lucas that they just tried that was locked suddenly opens.
And what is in this door?
Well, Wes Phelan decides to go look, and as she is peeking in the door, she sees, like, the trail of some white material being pulled around the door, like the closet, and she gets pulled into the room, and the door slams shut behind her, and no one else can get in.
And she sees an apparition of Mustache Man!
Well, first she sees the ghost of a woman.
Oh, that's right.
She sees the lady that Bridger saw. And as everyone outside is trying to get into the room, but they can't, because not only is it locked, but, like, the door handle's hot, and then there's fire, and then it's ice cold, and it's everything, basically, you don't want to touch.
Oh, no, a boob. Lucas can't handle that right now.
He can't. It's too much. Too much.
No,
boob.
No.
No, I'm around.
Not in front of Bridger.
I'm around my surrogate parents.
It's so weird. Why do you have to be weird, ghosts?
Then Wes Phelan, as the woman disappears, sees Mustache Man.
Mustache Man. And Mustache Man has the coolest fucking ghost line. It's so good. He looms over her and says, "This is my torment, to which you have no right." Oh, it's so good. That's ghost shit right there.
There's a lot of ghost shit. And so he sends drawers flying, and then he sends her flying, and she crashes into a table, and a journal goes flying and opens up, and just as he's like going to attack her, because apparently ghosts can attack, he looks down at the journal and sees in very big writing, "I hate him."
It's a very succinct diary entry. The biggest handwritten letters I've ever seen.
Very not written, like 1913 handwriting. And this stops him. It makes him freeze. It crushes him. As they are trying to break down the door, he just screams, "No!" And the door, like, blasts out at them instead and sends them flying.
So that brings us to yet another commercial break. And on the other side, we fade in to everyone checking out this very haunted room that Crocker is defending with what seems like a pound of salt from his pocket.
He just keeps pulling salt out
every
of
time.
His pocket. Every time you look at this man,
he's got another fistful of salt.
I love it. Thing is like he is salting this doorway like he's on Food Network. It's the amount of salt they all use.
He's informing Lucas that salt keeps the devil from the door. That's why he's sprinkling it in the threshold, which explains why Levin got that beard trim.
Yeah.
He tried to eat a pretzel and he couldn't.
Oh, he couldn't do it.
Until he stopped being the devil.
Yep, that explains it. So Wes Phelan is being fucking weird.
Oh, yeah?
She can't remember what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then
she wonders about her diary.
Her diary. Oh, my diary there. And she's very confused. And then she's like, "Oh, I hate him. I hate him." And Levin's like, "Why don't you lay down?"
Because he thinks he's being fired right now.
Yeah.
That's
yes. Like, oh,
oh
no.
I hate him. This ghost freak on my crew.
So he kind of like shoves everyone out because he's going to do an EKG right there. Mm-hmm. And then I guess that's possible.
It stands for electrocardio ghost.
He's gonna do like a little seance for the ghost to tell him how she's doing.
Dr. Ghost.
So
coming soon on CBS.
Okay, so there.
I'd watch Dr. Ghost.
There is this trailer right now that keeps popping up for some TV show, I think it's on CBS, that's like, but it's like a cruise ship doctor. And every time I see this trailer, it's the type of trailer that I was like, no way, that's just like a show about a cruise ship doctor. This is absolutely like a haunted cruise ship or something. Nothing about it is spooky, but it's the weirdest. Yes, Dr. Odyssey with Joshua
Odyssey.
Jackson.
Yes.
Yeah. It all is like very, very normal, but I was like, if this trailer went like 20 seconds longer, you would see heads getting chopped off. You would see ghosts. Like something about it, just like, this is weird.
You would see that his assistant is a ghost that's able to phase through people and find like where the blockage in the artery is or whatever, because it's a ghost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's absolutely not what the show is, but there's something about this trailer that just screams to me like, and where's the plot twist? Where is it? Mm-hmm. Come on. I mean, it's Joshua Jackson. He was in Fringe. Give me the weird shit.
Those weird, weird Mighty Ducks.
Those days are past him. I want weird, not normal. So Bridger is like pushing everyone out of the room and Crocker's like, but I just got done salting the door.
Continually. For a long, long time.
And so they're out in the hallway. Lucas has the diary. Mm-hmm. And it's opened to 1914.
1914?
Which means they survived a year and a half after the ship sank.
Forget the spiders. What did the people eat? What is this?
Spiders. They ate spiders.
Well, then who made the webs if they ate all the spiders?
There were a lot of spiders. It's kind of my worst nightmare of a boat. You're trapped underwater with like 100 billion spiders, and all you can eat is spiders. Mm-hmm, we'll try not to get eaten by the spiders.
The ways they came up with to cook and eat spiders is just like that bit of Forrest Gump where he mentions like 400 ways to prepare shrimp.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've never seen all of that movie.
You've never seen all of Forrest Gump?
No, I've seen...
Where Bubba keeps naming shrimp preparations?
I maybe have seen all of it, but I've never seen it all at once. So I don't know what I'm missing. I don't really care to watch the whole thing in one sitting. It's fine. They also find out the name of the diary owner is Lillian, and Bridger's like, that's who I saw.
That's the one.
That's the one.
That's the ghost who wants help, not the other ghost who wants hurt.
So they go to, like, the first entry, which is from April 1st, 1913,
and it says, fooled ya.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't. No.
So it is her talking about how she is going on this journey, and she's met a man who makes her swoon.
Oh, just the presence of him. Oh.
But Levin comes out and is like, hey, Westphalen's heart rate is really low, but she keeps asking for drugs.
Stimulants, which seems like, yeah, if her heart rate's low, then that's good.
Should probably give those to her. It might be helpful.
It seems like it would fix the symptom.
But he points out that he thinks she is still having her experience with the ghostly realm. Yeah. So Hitchcock and the No-Names.
Oh, right. They're here. Well, elsewhere. Yes.
They're many levels below. They have learned that all the levels below engineering have flooded and that the George was definitely sabotaged and it must have taken days to sink.
Which fits with Crocker's history.
Yes. And Bridger's like, cool, I'm going to come down there and check it out. For some reason. And so he tells all the rest of them to, like, stay with Westphalen and, like, keep an eye on her. And they go back into the room. And she's not there.
No.
But she quickly comes back because she was doing the fastest quick change in existence. Like, she must have had 5 ghost lady-in-waitings helping her.
So yes, Kristen Westphalen begins this journey in her professional attire, right? She looks like a scientist. She looks like a doctor.
Yeah.
She's got big cozy sleeves and a coat with deep pockets to do science out of. She is now in an antique gown.
Ball gown.
For the ball. She has a fascinator in her hair. She has long, like, pheasant feathers, I guess, tickling everyone's faces as she turns around.
And, you know, gloves that go past her elbows, off the shoulder, definitely wearing a corset.
Full and elaborate updo. Yes, yes.
And she is not herself at all. Definitely possessed, talking about how she can hear the music and asking Bridger to, like, finish buttoning her up.
You can't say she doesn't know how to party. This lady is having a great time.
So Bridger's like, keep her here and keep an eye on her. I'm gonna go check out engineering. And so he goes walking through the hallways and turns into Spooky Smoky Hallway.
I love the misty hallway. Beware the misty hallway. Every fog machine in Los Angeles was poured into the misty hallway, lit up like acid green.
It's so good.
Mustache man waits in the clouds on the other end. It looks so cool.
He's like, get off my ship.
And Bridger says, no.
I love it so much. Just... No.
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 I don't take orders from you. You're a ghost.
And so Mustache Man is not happy about this. No. And as the lights come on, he starts to fade, but he's still yelling for Bridger to get off his ship. But Bridger, you know, keeps going and is going through the hallways and he gets to Hitchcock and she's like, let's go this way. And he's like, no, I think we should go this way. And she's like, all those doors are locked. And he opens one. And they go in.
And it is a large stateroom, a sort of suite, I suppose. And inside, they find a body.
It's the skeleton of the engineer.
Bridger keeps his big industrial flashlight on way longer in this exploration than I expected, because every light is on in this stateroom.
Just in case. You don't know. The power might fluctuate. It might go out.
Well, it's got the magic thing that makes power happen. It's fine.
I don't know.
Osmotic membranes. You can do everything.
I'm surprised they didn't tell me that the spider webs were from, like, the membrane growing,
like a sourdough starter?
No.
That's what I thought this gesture was, kneading bread.
Roots, like plant roots.
Oh, that's roots.
I could not remember what roots were.
Congratulations, LeVar Burton.
Different types of roots.
You just got a big award.
Yeah. So while they are looking over the dead body, Hitchcock finds a dance card. And she's like, oh, there's only one name written over and over again. And
that's Bridger's so sweet.
Like, Lillian? She's like, yeah, how'd you know that?
Because we're in a narrative. We gotta keep the loose ends to a minimum.
And then he pulls out a scroll?
Yes!
A little rolled up piece of paper that says, here lies sweet Robert Fitzgerald, May 13th, 1913.
This is the body of the chief engineer laid to rest with care by Lillian, his one true love, who's then left on her own to fend for herself against the fiendish captain who loved her, but she did not love in return.
I mean, we find this out and really in the next scene, though, because Bridger calls Crocker and they start, like, reading the diary to him. And
I love this scene. So, is it Crocker that's reading or is it Levin?
Crocker's reading.
Right. While Levin is just, like, taking Westphalen's pulse, and she is blank and expressionless. She's just not there.
Yeah.
Until Crocker starts reading and she immediately begins reciting the same words alongside him from her ghost memory.
It goes from at the same time to she pulls ahead before he can read
it. And she has expression and emotion again. She's roused back to life by this recitation. It's so good.
Yeah. And then she gets up and starts walking and they follow her.
And one of her lines is also very, very cool. Quote, I am trapped alone with him now. I have nothing in my heart but venom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so she leads them to a door, the door to the captain's room, and it is bleeding from the nameplate.
Again, all your classic spooks, all your haunted house effects.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. The thing I love with it all, though, is it's like, serious classic spooks. Like, they're taking it seriously. Like, that blood is that is some good looking, like, bleedy door.
Yeah, when they try to open a door that doesn't want to be opened yet and the knob is in flames, it's scary.
Yeah. And so they, like, radio Bridger and are like, you should come here, the door's bleeding.
So on the other side of the commercial, everyone's back at this door. And, you know, we got to catch people up that were in the bathroom or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they ask, whoa, what's this? And Levin says, quote, it's the door to the spirit's earthbound sanctuary. They pay you for this, dude? What is that?
And they're like, it's bleeding. He's like, not really. It's just manifesting our fears. And so Crocker goes to the door and tries to open it. And there's fire, of course.
Again, doors hate Crocker.
And Hitchcock has just seen this shit for the first time and is like, what is going on?
She's been in the basement dealing with, like, mechanical faults. She's never seen a ghost.
So she has missed out on the fire and ice doors and the spookums.
Why is our science administrator high as balls? What's going on? Why is she dressed like this?
So, Westphalen, still, like, reciting shit, and she's, like, saying stuff, and they're interpreting it, and what comes out is that the day that she and Robert, the engineer, were supposed to be married, the ship went down.
Yes. I love Stephanie Beecham in this episode.
Yeah.
She is so good spooky.
Yeah.
She's doing the good spooky.
Yeah. And so Bridger goes to touch the door again, and of course there's fire, and Crocker looks over at Lucas, like, hey, we brought the kid.
The allegedly ghost-proof kid. So yes, Lucas must test the trial of the doorknob, for he is pure of heart. He has never known
a... Pure of heart?
He has never known a carnal touch.
And the whole reason they want to get in here is because they want the ship's log, like the captain's log. So Lucas is kind of building up the courage of like, okay, I'll go touch this door that has shot fire at all of you. I am a child, I would like to point out.
The bleeding door? That's the one you want to... Okay, all right, cool. Am I getting paid?
Can not
I get,
yet.
Can I get hazard pay?
He's not getting paid yet. That's actually a plot point.
Can I get like... first pick of brownies when they come out in the cafeteria, something.
So he builds up the courage and like goes to grab it and realizes like, oh, there's no fire shooting out at me. And he opens the door.
And that's when the fire starts shooting at the whole room.
Once he has stepped inside, fire fills the doorway so they cannot go in and he cannot go out. And then the door smashes shut behind him.
And there's an inferno in this sealed room. It's not great to have all the fire. We are definitely overtaxing the osmotic membrane's ability to to electrolytically produce oxygen.
It's okay. The ghost is like, he's got young lungs. He's it's fine. So they're all freaking out on the outside. Like, are you okay? Are you okay? Trying to yell for him. But before like they can do much, Westphalen starts wandering off, and so Bridger tells everyone else to go follow her. Not like, hey, one person stay with me. Everyone follow her. I will stay here with the child that is trapped in the fiery room behind the bleeding door.
Behind the bleeding door is another one of Krieg's private collection, and it fits in both categories, actually.
Behind the Bleeding Door would be a great album name.
It's a sequel to Green Room, actually. It's a movie.
Oh! I'd see that.
Yeah.
And then
you really
sad.
Liked Green Room.
I did. I mean, it had an amazing cast.
I also really... I don't mean to say that, like, I didn't, but yeah.
I love Anton Yelchin. I love everyone else that was in it. It was absolutely fucking terrifying. But that was a great movie. Very against what I would normally be into.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I don't want, like, part of me wants to watch it again, and I also know I probably will never watch it again. So we're just going to rewatch, like, Anton Yelchin and Fright Fest again and again.
Sure, sure. Fright Night.
Fright Night, not Fright Fest. That's Six Flags.
Yeah. So Lucas is in the room.
And Bridger is like calling, like, are you okay? And he's like, yeah, I'm okay. I'm fine. And
I'm just a little bit on fire.
A little bit on fire. There's also definitely Mustache Man Ghost in here.
Yes, yes. And so this is Lucas's trial of the damned.
Yes.
He passes through the flames by just staring the ghost down and showing him who's boss through solid eye contact.
Yes. So he gets the captain's log. The captain looks at him and is like, tell him to go to the ballroom. That's where he'll find what he's looking for. So Lucas like tells Bridger this, and Bridger's like, but what about you? And he's like, I'm fine. It's just a ghost. Go ahead. And
he gets the ghost talking, or the ghost wants to talk now that he's, I don't know, seen the steel-eyed will of Lucas Walenchek.
Yes. The ghost, the captain, is like, I didn't mean to hurt anyone. I didn't know there were stowaways on board. So those, like, three people that are trapped in the room that Hitchcock found, he's like, I didn't know. I didn't want to hurt them. And Lucas is like, but what about Lillian and Robert? You trapped them here. And he's like, well, I loved her. Like, she didn't love you. Like, what? What are you doing?
But after 105 years at the bottom of the sea, he has become contrite. What he needs to move on is forgiveness.
Yes. And Lucas is like, Well, have you asked her? Because Lucas understands the importance of communication and mm-hmm. honest relationships.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever considered that women are people who you can speak to and will exercise their own agency and judgment?
No.
It was 1913. Whatever.
Mustache Man does the saddest, most forlorn faces looking down at his shoes so many times through this, and I love it. So, over in the ballroom, Westphalen is dancing around where everyone just, like, stands around Lillian's skeleton that's on display.
Come on, wallflowers, let's have some fun. Come on.
You gotta put on the living room routine. So Bridger gets there and also goes up to the skeleton of Lillian, takes a little peeky there of like, ah, yes, dead person. Okay. And then goes to Westphalen and is talking to her as Lillian, you know, like, why are you here? Like, mm-hmm. why haven't you left?
And one thing about this show that I was very surprised by is like, okay, so I go online, I go on YouTube, I'm trying to find clips to like share with people, and I don't find clips. Instead, what I find is a surprisingly healthy scene of people making Sequest tribute videos.
Yes, yes.
Making like AMVs. Yes. And one of the most popular like topics is
Bridger Westphalen.
Bridger Westphalen sweet old people romance.
Oh yeah. People love Bridger Westphalen.
And people who make those compilation videos set to their favorite sappy songs love this scene.
Yeah.
Because it is the two of them dancing and she's dressed up so like formally and classically. It's a lovely image stripped entirely out of context because, for one, that's not Westphalen.
No.
That's a ghost.
That's a ghost.
That's a ghost he dancing with.
The Sequest fandom loves their relationship.
Yes. Yourself included.
Yes. I do not like any relationship they try to put him on later.
Neither does anyone else, as far as I can tell.
I ship them to the end. They get married. They adopt Lucas. Life great. Okay? This is what happens. Lucas goes to them for Christmas. Mm-hmm. It's lovely. Mm-hmm. But it's either that or it's like Lucas angst or Lucas Bridger father-son relationship.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's all you're getting. That's what everything is out there.
You gotta dig to find other things like, whoa, that goofy Krieg.
Yeah.
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 But yeah, the huge, huge majority is the Westphalen Bridger Wallencheck family unit in pairs or all together.
The found family.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they are dancing. They have the conversation of like why Lillian is still there. Is that she, you know, she can't leave, the pain is too great. And he points out the line from her diary about the venom in her heart.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, oh, that's it, isn't it? And she's like, no, he is, as she points off where Ghost Captain Mustache Man has now come through the door. With Lucas coming right behind.
Come through with Lucas. I just wanted him to say, hey, Captain, I tamed a malevolent specter. Look at this. I invented Pokemon.
So Mustache Man goes to Lillian's skeleton and talks to her. That he never wanted it to be this way, to hold her here.
And he releases her.
And that she should go to Robert and to, like, please forgive him.
Which is a huge turnaround, because in the previous scene in the captain's quarters, Lucas asks, all right, you're here because you need to be forgiven. What keeps her here? And he says, her guilt keeps her here. Then immediately he says, I release you.
Mm-hmm.
Make up your mind, dude.
They chatted for a little while.
Sure, afterwards. I guess.
The ghost of Lillian rises out of the skeleton and says that she forgives him. And then a UFO light appears.
Yes, this column of golden glow appears, and the ghost of the engineer is
Robert.
Inside it. Oh, we do so love a spookum in uniform.
And so Lillian goes to him and they embrace, and then Robert turns to Mustache Man and extends his hand and is like, yes, come join us in the UFO light.
They're all going to heaven in the carpool lane. They get the short line for tolls if they go all three together.
And then they are gone, and Westphalen, like, snaps out of it. Mm-hmm. And before she can say anything, though, being the doctor that she is, she immediately notices that Bridger's little color test thing about the air has turned to the scary color, and that they yes, gotta get yes. out of there.
Her first line upon becoming herself again is saving everyone from suffocation.
And so they're all like,
I don't see Levin doing that. Levin, where are you at?
This is what I'm saying, though.
You are a crank.
Here, okay, when I said, like, they should have just said, it's the ghosts, it would absolutely make sense right. that there's suddenly no air that's breathable, because the ghosts left, so it's not filtering the air through their ghosty powers, and now they need to use their oxygen inhalers to get out before they all suffocate because the ghosts are gone. Just say it's the ghosts!
I'm not gonna say that we're better writers than the woman who wrote Measure of a Man. I'm going to imply it, though.
And so as they leave, and back on the Sequest, Bridger is reading the captain's log to the steam version of his wife.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Tying up all the loose ends.
And what we find out is that the captain did what he did, sabotaging the ship, because he wanted the engineer's reputation to be ruined.
In fact, he sabotaged the ship on the day he and Lillian were supposed to be married. He was so resentful of the orders from the ship's owner that he, as ship's captain, must perform the marriage tie the woman he loved to another man in matrimony. It drove him mad.
So his whole point, though, was just to sabotage the reputation of the engineer, not actually kill anyone initially.
But then Robert, seeing a task to be done, had to go down and save the ship.
And
but
Lillian wouldn't leave without him.
Mm-hmm.
And then they all got trapped and they all died. And after all that, the captain went and shot himself because of the guilt he felt over all of this.
And the last line of the captain's log is, quote, "No horror is unimaginable to a man who knows not love." What a moral to end your ghostly tale on. If someone does not have love, they are capable of anything. Anything.
So Bridger goes and like, says, talk to you later, honey, to his steam wife.
Dear cyber ghost wife, I hope you like my story. The end.
And turns it off. And then we scan over to the captain's log, and next to it is one of the badges for the oxygen, and it suddenly turns red, and there's a maniacal laugh.
Does that mean that Sequest atmosphere is bad now?
There might be a ghost on board that's out for, like, vengeance.
I think Hitchcock and her boys have something to fix. The scrubbers on the Fritz. I don't know.
Yeah. That's the end of the episode.
That's the end of the episode.
But we got a Bob fact.
Bob fact. So, Bob Ballard talks about how very many shipwrecks have been discovered in the last 10 years. You know, the mid to late 80s and early 90s.
Titanic.
The Bismarck. The Lusitania. And then he floats an idea. What if future technology would allow us to go down, you know, pump in some air and create undersea museums people can walk through the shipwrecks?
That'd be cool. I'd love that. We are not there. Let me tell you, Bob, some shit happened last year. Because we ain't there yet. Think about the sub.
Oh.
Boom.
There is a like one molecule thick puddle over several hundred square miles that used to be billionaires.
Yeah.
That
I say this like Bob Ballard's dead. I don't think he's dead. I think he's still alive and kicking and he knows about this. I don't know why I act like Bob has to learn what he predicted.
Well, it's all the ghosts.
It's all the ghosts. So, Tyler, what did you think of the spooky Halloween-y episode?
I think it is a lovely change of pace. I appreciate them going all in on, yeah, the classic haunted house scares. And, yeah, treating them somberly isn't the right word, but, like, respectfully. Like, this is real fire. This is a real problem. There's no one in the ghost ship is denying it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's part of why Westphalen is the one to get possessed.
Yeah, because she would be the one, like, I mean, she didn't spit. If she would have spit, would she have been possessed?
Right, right.
She was the target.
You do have to wonder.
She didn't spit, and she was giving the most, like, stink eye to the situation.
And everything, particularly everything still on Sequest rather than the George, is given a plausible explanation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Bridger fell out of bed, the button was stuck, blah, blah, blah. You know, you all of this has plausible deniability.
Yeah.
But when you're on the George, no one is pointing those things out.
No.
So we're all in it and feeling it and... Lucas defeated a malevolent force with the power of his will.
Yes. And they wonder why he's got an ego sometimes. He took down a ghost.
He took down a ghost in a staring contest. And ghosts don't have blink reflexes. Like, how did he do it? How did he do it?
It's the power of the child.
He's not a child. Oh, I'm grown.
We know that, Lucas. Oh. Obviously, you're a grown adult.
It's not my fault. I didn't do anything.
So you got a Bob fact for us?
I got a Bob fact. I want to talk to you about nitrogen narcosis.
Ooh.
Nitrogen narcosis is a suite of neurological symptoms caused by the aesthetic effect of gases in your tissues at dive pressure.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about things like a loss of anxiety, feelings of tranquility, and mastery of the environment.
That sounds awesome.
Similar to nitrous oxide.
That sounds great.
We're also talking about impaired judgment and loss of focus.
I already got those.
Tunnel vision, loss of the shivering reflex, so your core temperature can drop a lot faster than you're planning for. Vertigo, feelings of exhilaration or giddiness, or on the other hand, extreme anxiety, depression, and paranoia.
Okay.
Nitrogen narcosis leads divers to talk about Martini's Law.
Martini's Law.
Which is that you get the feeling of one martini for every 10 meters you go down below 20 meters.
Oh.
So, once you get to 200 feet down, which is where the George sat on the seabed, you can experience hallucinations, hysteria, and terror.
Oh.
What a great, plausible explanation for your ocean-based ghost story.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. So who knows what it was? Very nice.
Do you have a Bob fact, dearest darling love of mine?
Yes, yes. So I'm going to talk about shipwrecks.
Shipwrecks? Why should today be different from any other day? Of course you are.
Why would it be different? This summer we visited Whitefish Point.
Yes.
In the UP of Michigan. And
home to the Great Lakes Shipwreck Museum.
The Great Lakes Shipwreck Museum. This area along Lake Superior, the Whitefish Point Underwater Preserve, was established in the 80s to protect and conserve shipwrecks and historical resources for about like 376 square miles of Lake Superior's bottomland. You know this. We read about it while there. For our listeners out there, between the loss of the Invincible in 1816 and the sinking of the Edmund Fitzgerald, which you've probably heard of, in 1975. Yes, 75. I think a lot of people think it's older. Mm-hmm. It was 1975.
Well, that is 49 years ago.
Yeah, but I think people always put it like back in like the 30s or earlier.
We got a big anniversary 70s. Coming up next fall, though.
Fuck. We should go. go again. So the Whitefish Point area within that time frame has claimed at least 240 ships. Mm-hmm. It is a major shipping channel. Anything like entering or leaving Lake Superior like goes past there, basically.
Right.
And you're kind of screwed.
And because of the geography, there's like narrowing of the channel, which mm-hmm. leads to collisions.
Yes.
The bend in the lake also causes storms to get especially yes. rough there.
The gales of November.
There's a lot of factors that make it like the deadliest part.
The deadliest place. And like if a lot of the stuff about shipwrecks in that area and like the Edmund Fitzgerald alone is a lot of the stuff is like if you can make Whitefish Point, if you mm-hmm. can make it, you're kind of in the clear. You're gonna make it the rest of the way. But I want to talk about a different shipwreck.
Okay.
That is in that area, and that is the SS Comet.
Okay.
It was a steamship that operated on the Great Lakes, and it was built in 1857, and it had like many ships that then end up sinking, a lot of maritime accidents prior to it sinking, a lot of problems with regulations and whatnot. But
those darn regulations, when will they learn?
In 1875, it finally did sink, mm-hmm. And 10 people died.
They got 150th coming up next fall.
And it became known as the only treasure ship of Lake Superior.
Oh.
Because it had 70 tons of Montana silver ore when it sank.
Oh.
And it is now a part of the Whitefish Point Underwater Preserve. And there are pieces of it that are actually at the Shipwreck Museum that were actually, like, there's controversial stories about some of the early things that the So before the museum was established, and the people who established it were like a historical society, Shipwreck mm-hmm, Historical mm-hmm. Society, and they have since done a lot of like going to shipwrecks and like preserving things like properly, but early on apparently a lot of it was actually done illegally.
Cool. Awesome.
And so there's actually some of the stuff that society did before the museum was going and taking stuff from that shipwreck, and it was considered illegal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I guess the pieces are technically owned by the University of Michigan, but they're on display at the Shipwreck Museum.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that's my fact, is that there's a treasure ship in Lake Superior. No one's ever actually, like, gone and gotten the ore.
It's still there.
It's still there.
There is a score waiting for someone willing to risk the nitrogen narcosis to go get it.
Yeah, there could be other people who did take stuff, like other illegal actions that happened. But as far as they know, there is no one who has attempted to take 70 tons of ore, which kind of makes sense.
If anyone is looking to put their kids through college.
There you go.
There you go.
There you go.
Now that's a Bob fact for the ages, dear. Thank you very much.
I think my shipwreck fact, Bob, was a lot better. I was just going to say. Are you excited for next week?
I am excited for next week.
I'm so excited for next week.
Next week is absolutely one of my top tier number one Sequest episodes.
The next two episodes are absolutely two of my favorite episodes.
For very different reasons.
Very different reasons.
Very different flavors of Sequest.
Absolutely love both of them, and I'm so excited. Some of the best episodes of Sequest ever.
But you'll have to look forward to that with us. In the meantime, to pass the time, why don't you give us a rating and review? 5 stars can go a long, long way. That's how we fill the sky bit by bit.
You can also tell your friends.
That's how we fill your friends bit by bit.
Yeah. You can also, you know, go like check out our other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I got Throwback Bound going on.
You do. And it is a joy.
And you got Bizarre Podcasts. Space Puppets.
Yes.
Also a joy.
And I'll talk more about that next time we have a free episode.
And somehow if you're new to this and like never listened to our old shit, you should definitely go check out our Spookums episodes of History Honeys from back when.
You know what? You
should. It's perfect
for
Halloween.
You should. The first podcast the two of us did together was called History Honeys. It was much more factual. There was far less TV in it.
occasional TV, but it was history based.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of, honestly, it's eclectic, I would say. You cast a wide, wide net, except for three annual traditions.
Yes. We had Spookums.
Spookums. Valencrimes.
Valencrimes.
And the New Year's episode, which was a totally different format.
Yeah.
Yes.
Valencrimes and Spookums times were my favorites. Yeah. So if you're looking for more ghosts, spooky things, shipwrecks, lots of stuff to pick from back then.
We had shipwrecks.
Mm-hmm. There's multiple shipwreck. I did the Eastland disaster, and I did one that was Great Lake shipwrecks, specifically ones mentioned in folk music.
Because you gotta narrow them down. There's thousands.
So I think the Edmund Fitzgerald got talked about, but I think I focused on other ones that aren't as well known.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, I don't really remember at this point. So with that, I'm Elena.
I'm Grant, and in the words of Captain Nathan Bridger,
"For beneath the surface lies the future." Spooky, scary skeletons.